In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, a shortened day trade finished the market up like this. December contract in the wheat pit managed to gain 30 cents, up the limit 803.5. In Chicago was the settlement price. The March contract at 826, up 30. May futures up 30 at 813. July wheat at $7.10. That's the harvest month. 22.5 cents the gain. In September futures at 715. A settlement price there, up 22 for the day. December corn futures, 382, up 3/4. March contract at 398.75, up 0.5. And the May futures at 408.75 were unchanged on the day. July contract at 417.5, 0.75 cents higher in the corn pit on this Wednesday afternoon. December futures next year at 427.75, up 3.25. January soybean futures at $10.84, down 3 for the day. March futures at $11.25, down 2.25. And the May contract in the bean pit at $11.06.5, down 2.5 cents. November futures next year, a nickel lower at $10.22.5. December bean meal futures, $2.87.40, down $2.60. January futures down $2.70 at $2.90. December bean oil at $45.95, 23 higher. January futures, $46.37, up 15. Mercantile exchange numbers, December contract in the live cattle pit at $96.35, 17.5 higher. February futures down 7.5 cents at $98.20, a hundredweight. November feeder cattle, 19 cents lower at $108.66. January futures at $109.90, 32.5 cents higher. December lean hog futures, $55.75, 92.5 higher. The February is down 25 at $62.75. And the April lean hogs, $66.32.5, 12.5 cents lower on the afternoon. The outside markets, crude oil, January futures down 73 at $97.30 a barrel at this hour. The dollar at 75.046 is down 0.074. The CRB index at 351.07, down 150. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, 66 points lower, at 12,943 for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does each and every Wednesday, is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, I suppose we ought to talk about what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Maybe rather than starting at the board, we should start with the Wall Street Journal and the headlines there.
Yeah, there is good news. They said with this cheap dollar, we're exporting a lot of green equipment to places like China, Russia, and, of course, South America, Brazil. We know that the soybean price is has risen quite a bit, and it's very profitable to raise a bushel of soybeans in South America. And also we know that it's a big business down there turning sugar into ethanol. And so John Deere tractors and combines are going there. And it, as I understand it from my farmer friends, it's awfully hard to buy farm machinery, new machinery, and because a lot of it's already been bought and hopefully paid for by our competitors to the south. It also brings up a point that I do feel that the South American production has to be increased this year and down the road. There's talk about that, and several commodity analysts are talking about this potential expansion at some point in time, and we also know that they have been very good competitors of ours in the past, so there's nothing to discourage, I think, that to happen in the future.
Was the trend higher, and will it remain higher through the Thanksgiving and Christmas? Thanksgiving's tomorrow, so I suppose it's higher at the moment, but through Christmas, and will farmers take advantage, and should they take advantage of the opportunities?
You know, one of the things that historically there is a lot of cash grain sales that take place between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's a traditional time frame. This is a little better than usual because we have $3-plus corn and $10-plus soybeans and $8-plus wheat. The other thing that's helping propel this new era in agriculture, of course, is this. We came very close to trading $100 a barrel crude oil. The dollar's at 75 cents, and this has encouraged basically a very strong commodity market here for the last at least 6 months, so to speak. China is in the back of everybody's news. So we do feel that, traditionally we will see cash grain move. We know these big mountains of corn that stored out here on the ground, it's been basically a win-win deal for the people that bought the corn, hedged it, and the export market's strong. So we do have a lot of strength in this market, even with a lot of the background news of subprime issues, you know, the stock market basically, you know, in a downtrend. So we do have a lot of to be thankful for on the farm and some of the agricultural manufacturing in the United States.
What do you see in the corn market over the next month?
My general impression is that the corn market basically is very comfortable with the acreage outlook. It's very comfortable with the flat price, you know, the demand situation. 2 weeks ago or a week ago, I felt that the corn market was high enough for the time being, and we would see some gradual price erosion. And then we saw this, you know, turnaround in the crude oil jumping again from $90 last week to $98.70, I think a new record high, and that basically stabilized the corn market. My general opinion is that corn prices, I think, are high enough unless we run past $100 a barrel on crude here in the next 10 days to 2 weeks, Todd. I think corn's fairly priced.
Any fear for the couple of trading sessions that we'll have the rest of this week that the electronic trade could really move it around on light
volume? You know, I don't think so. Everybody is extremely nervous on this continuation of the wheat market and what happens in China, and unless crude oil would make some sort of a U-turn of going down below $90 a barrel, I think the commodity markets are going to be very, very stable here in the next 10 days to 2 weeks. The weather forecast this morning was almost picture perfect around the world. We do need a little more rain in the winter wheat area. Some of the guys are even projecting that, but you know, from a producer's point, Australia is getting rain, South America is getting rain, so it's in Central Illinois is getting rain, and what more could you ask for as far as good weather in the world?
You know, since you mentioned it, we probably ought to talk about wheat just a bit because she gained 30 cents, went limit up today.
Yeah, it did, and one of the things we understand, and one of the groups in Memphis mentioned this to me about 2 weeks ago, and just recently when I talked to him, is the last dollar up in wheat has been based on the Indian grain reserve of wheat. They have a lot of wheat on hand. Their growing conditions are excellent. They basically paid a big premium to build a wheat reserve when they bid it up the last time. I think they bid it from $6 to $7 a bushel and has pushed it on up higher than that. They really could back away from it and wait and probably and be a good producer, I mean a good buyer if they would. Pakistan's also in the marketplace for wheat. They have some political unrest over there, and, of course, who knows what they will do. So that's been the last, 50, 60 cents up here this week and early last week is just based on this potential Indian deal. But as a, you know, world acreage up, Dan Bassey is, as I understand it, in Switzerland. He basically made a statement here. It was quoted in Reuters. Last year's crop was 609 million metric tons. This year he feels it's going to be 650 million tons. Our friends all over the world have pushed the production to the limit. We're planting a lot of wheat worldwide to take care of these high prices.
And that would be a million metric tons worldwide total production for the globe, right? Yeah, at 650 million metric tons. It was 609 last year, so that's correct.
About 490,
So
41 million tons bigger, which is enormous.
Yeah, that's an enormous amount of wheat. Most of it comes out of the northern hemisphere, so it'll be July by the time,
we
really start to see it.
Out of Argentina and, of course, Australia as well.
Well, that's fairly quickly, but most of the wheat that we get comes from the northern hemisphere, so it'll come on at that time. Do you think that the nearby contracts up to but not including the July can manage to stay fairly high until we get to the harvest season, or will they crack under the pressure and weight of such a large crop that could be coming
You'll
on.
See some of it crack as soon as we see Argentina and Australia. And Australia has basically been reluctant to sell any wheat ahead. And near as we can tell with these new rains coming in and their crop production, some of that wheat will be coming into the world market. So, you know, definitely the feed grain issue is being put to bed, and it's a wheat supply. And I do think that we will see some price erosion, but the real price erosion won't come until probably July time frame next year. And then we could, in my opinion, see some substantially lower wheat prices.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
Have a profitable day and have a nice Thanksgiving, and wish all our listeners the same.
All right. Thank you much, Paul.
Have a profitable day, Dave. Or,
Dave, Todd, both of us. That's okay.
Have a good one.
You too. That's Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. Here's what the weather looked like. It looks like at this point a snow advisory. A snow advisory is in effect for northwestern Illinois, including the Quad Cities, that until midnight tonight. A snow advisory is in effect for north central and northeastern Illinois, including the Chicago area, Rockford and LaSalle, from 5 o'clock this evening right on 3 a.m. tomorrow morning. A lake effect snow advisory in effect for Lake and Porter counties in northwest Indiana from 6 a.m. their time to 8 p.m. tomorrow. A lake effect snow watch in effect for LaPorte and St. Joe counties in northwest Indiana from tomorrow morning through Friday morning, and for Stark County from tomorrow morning through tomorrow evening. A tornado watch is in effect for portions of far southern Illinois, that until 8 o'clock this evening central time. So a lot of weather happening. Here's what Ed Kieser is forecasting for the two-state region at this time. He says tonight in the northern part of Illinois there will be snow during the evening hours. That'll taper to flurries after midnight. In the northern part of Indiana and central Illinois, periods of rain during the evening will change to snow after midnight. And then central Indiana and the south, periods of rain and evening thunderstorms. Lows will range from 22 in northwestern Illinois to 42 in the southeastern part of Indiana tomorrow, Ed says, in the north and central sections of Illinois. Mostly cloudy, some flurries in northwestern Indiana. Lake effect snow squalls with locally heavy snowfall possible. Elsewhere in northern and central Indiana, cloudy with some snow showers. In the south, mostly cloudy, a chance of a few sprinkles, and then some flurries. Highs tomorrow, says Ed, will range from 34 in northern Illinois to 44 in the south. At the bottom of the hour, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. In a few moments, I'll bring you the latest agricultural news from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Some farm costs will be up in 2008. Non-land costs for Illinois farms are projected to increase next year. University of Illinois Extension Farm Financial Management Specialist Gary Schnitke says non-land cost will average around $370 an acre for corn and about $220 an acre for soybeans in 2008, and that if you put land cost into those equations for corn on many farms in northern and central Illinois, that'll put the cost to produce an acre of the yellow gold into the mid-$500 range and about $400 an acre for soybeans. You can read Gary Schnitke's findings on the FarmDoc website at www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. In an article titled, Non-Land Costs for Corn and Soybeans Projected to Increase in 2008. Schnitke says, given those costs, break-even in revenues will be about $3 a bushel for corn and about $8 for soybeans for many farms next year. Paying Farmers to Protect the Environment. Paying Farmers to Protect the Environment is an idea worth exploring, says a University of Illinois agricultural economist who co-authored a new United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization report on the topic. Ag economist Jerry Nelson from the U of I believes carefully targeted payments to farmers could serve as an approach to protect the environment and address growing concerns about climate change, biodiversity loss, and water supply. Nelson co-authored the report for the FAO as part of its annual publication called The State of Food and Agriculture 2007. However, he says payments for environmental services are not the best solution in all situations, and if and when used, significant implementation challenges will remain. Environmental services by farmers could include such things as water purification and climate change mitigation. Farmers are not generally paid for these services, and no market yet exists for them. And that's a look at today's Agricultural News.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Happy Thanksgiving. Here's a list of turkey facts I think you might find of interest. Did you know that in a letter to his daughter, Ben Franklin proposed the turkey as the official United States bird? When the year 2000, the average American ate 17 3/4 pounds of turkey. That'd be pretty much a whole turkey. The heaviest turkey ever raised weighed 86 pounds. That's about the size of a large dog. A 15-pound turkey usually has about 70% white meat and 30% dark meat. The male turkey is called a tom, the female a hen. And the turkey was domesticated in Mexico and brought to Europe in the 16th century. Wild turkeys can fly short distances at relatively quick speeds, about 55 miles an hour, and the wild turkey can run 20 miles an hour. Turkeys' heads, you'll get a kick out of this one, turkeys' heads change colors when they become excited. Most of the turkeys raised for commercial production in the U.S. and otherwise are called White Hollands. It takes about 75 to 80 pounds of feed to raise a 30-pound tom turkey. A domesticated male turkey can reach that weight of 30 pounds in about 18 weeks after it hatches. 45 million turkeys are eaten each Thanksgiving. 22 million turkeys are eaten at Christmas. 19 million turkeys are eaten at Easter. Male turkeys gobble. Hens don't. They make a clicking noise. Turkeys have heart attacks. The United States Air Force was doing test runs, breaking the sound barrier. Some nearby turkeys just, dropped dead. The five most popular ways, by the way, to serve leftover turkey is as a sandwich, stew or soup, salad, casserole, and stir fry. Have a great Thanksgiving. If you'd like to see more odd turkey facts, visit the University of Illinois Urban Extension's website. That's the Urban Extension website at www.urbanext.uiuc.edu. Well, from the turkey, we'll move to beef cattle. Next week, the University of Illinois will host a beef cattle co-products conference in Springfield. It's Wednesday, the 28th of November. In a moment, we'll have more on how it will teach cattle producers to use agricultural co-products. Hay is in short supply in Illinois, and the price of grain is high. It means beef cattle producers are closely evaluating their feeding options. University of Illinois Extension Animal Systems team educator Dave Seibert says it's worth looking at co-products from the ethanol and other agricultural industries to fill the void for their cow-calf and feedlot operations.
They work exceptionally well. Actually, what we have this year is a situation where hay is at an extreme shortage. Especially in the southern half of the state, and of course throughout the state, we had the early freeze, and our first crop of hay was probably reduced 30 to 50%, with some people losing fields of hay, and thus hay prices are very, very high, quite possibly at record high prices. So again, people are out scrambling, looking at products to use, alternative methods of feeding their cattle. And all these co-products will sure work in with the beef cow herd, with the wean calf, as well as in the feedlots.
Seibert says there are a total of 36 plants geographically located close enough to Illinois to make them a viable feed source option. Using the co-products to supplement feed rations in a short hay crop year could mean the difference, he says, between culling the herd and continuing the operation at full capacity.
That's exactly right. Because it supplies a couple things. First of all, it's an excellent source of protein. Depending on the product you're working with, can be a good source of energy. Phosphorus is really very high in it. It does take some balancing with minerals and things to offset some of the other things. Sulfur can be pretty high, and that's going to be a topic that we're going to discuss, as well as a lot of things, storage and buying and that type of thing. So again, it fits in very well into supplementing crop residues and poor quality forages that producers may have available this year.
To that end, University of Illinois Extension has scheduled a beef cattle co-products conference to be held in Springfield on the state fairgrounds Wednesday, November the 28th, starting at 9 a.m. Central Time. The cost is $18 per person. Seibert will kick off the day by outlining where the 36 plants are located and what feedstuffs might be available from them. And then the rest of the day will be dedicated to incorporating those products into feed rations. Ruminant experts from three land grant and two state universities will lead the discussions. The day-long event will wrap up when noted U of I agricultural engineer Vijay Singh will discuss new co-products from the dry grind corn ethanol industry. Call your local University of Illinois Extension office for more information on the Beef Cattle Co-Products Conference. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. Time now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the cash grain market. And Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing, out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us this afternoon. Hi, Bill.
Hello, Todd.
Tell me about the basis levels in your area, please.
Well, let's start with the soybeans. In the last week, the soybean basis really hadn't done much of anything. It's stayed pretty steady. The futures price, you know, continues to make some moves higher, and that keeps buying enough beans, I think, to keep everybody satisfied. So we had kind of a surge right after harvest, but we haven't had much of a move since then. The corn basis, however, just continues to improve, and we're getting now, when you look at the basis versus the December futures, that I would say we're within 5 to 8 cents probably of a what I would call peak basis, or, you know, that basis level where a buyer could take delivery at the same price as going out and buying the cash corn. So in my mind, I think it's a time, if you've got some HTAs out there, for example, versus some unpriced bases, I guess what I'm saying, that you may want to go ahead and look at setting that, locking that basis in.
And what are your bids for the day?
January corn, 372, and January beans, 1045.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
You too. Bill Mayer is with Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A fight inside the cafeteria of Champaign Central High School disrupted the school's schedule this noon hour. Unit 4 says four students were arrested after the brawl, which prompted central administrators to put the school's emergency plan into effect, briefly rescheduling the lunch hour. Classes have resumed as normal. One student suffered minor injuries. Unit 4 says no weapons were used or found. A nursing home in Champaign faces a $50,000 fine for a mistake that led to a patient's death. The State Department of Health says the Helia Healthcare Facility on South Mattis didn't safely transfer a patient to a shower stall. The state says the patient hit her head on the wall and later died. Helia has not called for a hearing on the fine. A four-year contract is just about in place for more than 1,500 clerical workers at the University of Illinois. AFSCME members overwhelmingly approved the agreement yesterday after months of talks. The contract includes 2.5% pay hikes next year, as well as lower parking fees and relaxed guidelines for funeral leave. A supervisor in Chicago's Department of Transportation isn't going to lose his job, despite allegations that he used a racial slur and dressed up as a Ku Klux Klansman. The city's Human Resources Board decided that Joseph Annunzio made racist and derogatory remarks, but it overruled the city's inspector general, who called for his firing. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels says he won't make a renewed pitch in the upcoming legislative session for his plan to privatize the Hoosier Lottery. Daniels says lawmakers will be too busy considering property tax reforms. In the last session, he proposed leasing the lottery to a private operator and said one company was willing to pay several billion dollars over 30 years. The cafeteria at Urbana High School will become a welcoming place for people who don't want to spend Thanksgiving dinner alone tomorrow. The Student Senate has been putting on the free dinner for more than three decades. The student body vice president says volunteers are happy to give up a part of their holiday to offer dinner to seniors, poor families, or students who are staying on campus over the long vacation. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's a senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon on the day before Thanksgiving, Drew. How are we looking for tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow won't be terribly bad. I think today is the day that's really a big mess out there. Unfortunately, this is the day that everyone's traveling. So tomorrow, I think everybody will be where they need to be, and the weather will also be where it should be. It looks like the forecast right now is offering a continuation of deteriorating weather conditions across the Midwest for the rest of the day today. At this hour, we already have a considerable amount of rain falling across the heart of the Midwest and some snow back in portions of Iowa and Nebraska, and even a little freezing drizzle was reported earlier today in some areas of northeast Kansas. All of this mixed winter-like precipitation is going to shift to the east as we go through the afternoon and into the evening hours, and that will create a little bit of a challenge for some travelers across the region. Some slow airport delays are likely, certainly in the Chicago area, and as well as some other the northern Midwest locations. Anyway, the storm system will wind up overnight tonight, and we will see a snowfall increase from portions of eastern Iowa into Michigan. We'll probably see 1 to 3 and some local 4-inch accumulations. I really think most of the snow is going to be fairly light, though. I doubt seriously it'll be more than a couple of inches, but there will be a thin layer of ice that separates the snow area from the rain area. Most of the rain is expected to occur from central Illinois into southern or southeastern Michigan and areas southward. So there'll be a little narrow area there where the weather is not going to be very good with a mixture of winter type precipitation. Tomorrow, though, we will find ourselves looking at a improving trend, a lot of wind out there. It'll be cold, and temperatures will be below normal across most of the Midwest. We'll find ourselves looking at a clearing sky in the western Midwest, but the eastern areas will probably be under clouds most of the day.
The precipitation, whether as snow or rainfall, is likely to be welcomed by most producers across the Midwest. How widespread and how much do you think will fall?
From this particular event, I don't think we're going to see a tremendous amount of moisture. We will probably pick up on 0.1 to 0.5 inches in the majority of the region. Some areas in the extreme east and north may end up picking up 0.75 inches to maybe a short inch, but that's as good as it's going to get with this event. There is a follow-up system that is expected to come out across the eastern Midwest as we go into the late weekend, early part of next week. They'll probably lay down some additional moisture, probably running up to 0.75 inches again, with coverage probably close to 75% from southeastern Missouri to southeastern Michigan and areas to the southeast of that line. And there will be the potential for some locally greater amounts of precipitation once again. But I think most of the heavy rain with that event is going to be in the lower Mississippi River Basin or the Delta area.
How would you categorize it as in terms of the recharge for the winter season?
I think it's a step in the right direction. We've got a ways to go for some areas, especially in the southeastern part of the U.S., and I'm very concerned about that recharge down that way. I don't think we're going to see enough rain in those areas to fix the water supply situation, probably not at all during the entire winter season. But with that said, I don't want to imply that there's not going to be an improvement in soil moisture, because I think that will be the case. We'll bring the topsoil back to the point of saturation in many of these drier areas in the southeastern part of the U.S. and in parts of the Midwest as well. But we will probably not do a very good job generating so much moisture that we get runoff to boost the water supply situation, especially not in the southeastern corner of the country. That may take a while for that to be repaired, maybe even another season.
The growing season has been completed in the United States, but in South America, it's underway. How's the start going?
Well, conditions in Argentina are still a little bit on the dry side in the westernmost portions of the production region. We do need to see some significant rainfall in some of those western areas. The states, if you know them, or the provinces in this case, are Cordoba and Santiago del Estero. Both areas are suffering from long-term dryness, and there is crop stress going on in irrigated fields. Some rain will fall tomorrow and Friday in that region, offering some temporary reprieve, but that is the only rain event of significance that I see in that region for well over a week after that point. So dry conditions will come back into play. In Brazil, of course, there's a lot of market talk out there today about the trend change towards drier weather in southern portions of Brazil. This is likely to take place as we move through the next 10 days. Rain amounts in Rio Grande do Sul northward into parts of Paraná will fall off, will probably not generate enough precipitation to counter evaporation that will firm up the topsoil, but subsoil moisture will stay in great shape. There should not be any long-term crop moisture stress evolving for a while. Now, with La Niña prevailing, there is a pretty good chance that far southern Brazil, Uruguay, Paraguay, and eastern Argentina will keep a drier-than-usual bias going on through December and into January. That's when things may get a little interesting for that region.
We appreciate you being with us, Drew.
Have a great holiday.
You too. Drew Lerner is the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That is today's closing market report. We'll record Commodity Week a bit early this week, this afternoon, so it will be posted to the website at willag.org. By about 6 o'clock tonight, there is trade on Friday. Dave Dickey and I won't be in, so don't be looking for too much from the radio station then. I'll talk to you again on Monday.